Hey, Buzz, you hear about the Switch?
He's right over there.
Not that Switch, our Switch, to APG&E.
Well, we can do that?
Customers can switch electric suppliers anytime to find a better rate, lock in pricing.
I don't want new wires. I'm very attached to ours.
Only the part of the bill that covers electricity supply changes.
To APG&E?
People love their flexible, affordable electricity.
Nice.
Learn more at APGE.com.
On this week's Sports Beat Extra, I caught up with Kilkenny's Mia Griffin, who's been making history abroad as being named a part of the first ever contingent of Irish cyclists to compete in the Tour de France Femmes. Alongside this, she also won a number of big races this year and competed in the Giro d'Italia. We couldn't air the entire interview on Sports Beat Extra, so here's that full conversation with Mia for you now.
This is Sports Beat Extra.
Mia, thank you so much for joining me. Firstly, I want to ask, how are you getting on? I mean, you've had an absolute whirlwind of the last, I suppose, 12 months since I was speaking to you. I mean, we're actually approaching the Rossnamon again, which is the last time I had spoken to you. You know, what have you been getting up to? How has, I suppose, cycling life been treating you?
Yeah, so since I've seen you last, I can't believe it's been a year since then. It's literally flown by because I've done so much racing that it's hard to keep track of everywhere I've even been. And even when I was thinking of it this morning, I started my season in January and now we're in September and I'm still going and yeah, still have a lot of races to do as well. So this year has been crazy because I've done way more races than I've ever done in my whole life. So even last season, I think I've done 10 times more races than I did last season, this season. So I've been around the world everywhere, but I've really enjoyed it. And doing a lot of road racing has been such a nice experience and a little bit of a change to the last years and less big time out with injuries. So It's been a very positive year.
How have you been finding this? You mentioned like 10 times more races and obviously you're really enjoying it, but like how are you finding, I suppose, one, the time management aspect of that and then the travel aspect? Was there ever a point during the year where you kind of felt a bit burnt out from cycling, or has it just been continuous joy after joy?
Yeah, I think there's been times when I've felt really burnt out. Like for example, after the Giro, when I came back to Ireland, I was really, really tired and there was only 10 days between Giro and Tour. So I quickly had to try and piece myself back up together to get ready for the Tour. So there's definitely been times where I've been trying to get my body, when it's been tired, trying to make my body do stuff that maybe it does not want to do sometimes. And then it creates a lot of tiredness.
Speaking on obviously that intermediate period in between the Giro and the Tour, is it difficult, I suppose, to really sort of recuperate when you know the gravity of what you're going into? I mean, all the headlines beforehand, obviously yourself, Fiona Mangan, Laura Gillespie, like the first Irish women to compete in the Tour de France Femmes, like how does that, like does that give an added level of pressure that you're kind of worried about how you perform on those ones particularly?
Yeah, I think when I went to the Tour, is what I realized was that it's not like any other race. It's almost on par with the feeling of being at the Olympics, because in France it's such a big deal and there were so many people there at every start. There was people outside of our bus. There it was just so popular, and I just couldn't believe the gravity of how many people it brings in France and how popular it is. And for a women's cycling event, I've never actually experienced anything like it. Even the Olympics, it was actually much different and just felt much bigger in a way. So going from the Giro felt a lot more chill and a lot more easygoing than actually the Tour. But yeah, I think my headspace going from Giro to Tour was, what, I'm not feeling great and I'm going to have to do the biggest race of my life in a week's time. So, but I wanted to try to get there healthy and then just get my race myself into it as well. And then after a few days, I started to feel a lot better. So I was happy that I could feel like that as well.
You talk about obviously the difference in, I suppose, the feeling of that size. Like, I mean, when we were talking before about the Olympics, I think you were mentioning like you weren't actually in Paris. I think, were you in Marseille for that, was it? Yeah. So like you're kind of separated from that a little bit, are you? Do you feel like, because there's not, it's not, you're not part of this bigger global sort of sporting event with many different sports going on, that the Tour de France is obviously so much focused on just cycling, like that it actually drew in a more specialized crowd that were pretty much fanatic about it.
Yeah, it was actually crazy. Even in the morning before the race, there'd be people queuing outside the bus. There'd be people that want to get signatures and everything. And it was just on another level to anything that I've ever done. And yeah, of course, then it's overwhelming because you're before the stage, there's everyone there and there's all the crowds and everything. And then you're trying to focus on doing the race as well. And even in the bad weather, the people gathered. So it was really amazing.
You look at, obviously, you know, you mentioned the beginning of the season in January, like was this even a goal in your mind when you started in January, or is it just something that kind of presented itself later down the line?
Well, in December, I talked with my team manager and I said one of my goals of this season is to get my race days up and to try and have a full season of racing. So from the start, he said, okay, you can try do Giro and Tour. So it was in my mind to do the two of them. And then because of that, I think it was always a focus in the season to get there and to do them races and to use those races as a building block for my career and a building block for my fitness.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the building blocks kind of, they worked out perfectly in a way, didn't they? I mean, you look at the Irish Elite National Road Race champion, like that's a brilliant thing to have going straight in then to the Giro and then into the Tour, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a big boost for me to win nationals, especially because the last few years I've missed out on nationals from being injured. So I think as well, when I saw the course this year, I thought I have a big chance to finally win the nationals. And I went into it, yeah, believing in myself, but also maybe feeling like it was something that I really, really wanted. So to do that was so nice. And to be able then to wear the national champs jersey in those races was really, really cool.
Talk me through the Tour. Obviously, you're not on the same team as Fiona or Laura, but like, is there a sort of a shared camaraderie between you after races to kind of, you know, that you're the Irish trio that are out there for the first time ever?
Yeah, no, definitely. Even during the races, it's always really nice when I see them in the bunch, and like they're both really good in the bunch. So if I'm around them, I'm happy because they're moving in the right ways. And also before the stages and after the stages, we talked, and it was just great to have them around, just to, you know, see a familiar face. When you're doing something really hard, it's nice to have that camaraderie. And we're on different teams, but we're not directly in competition with each other. It's like it doesn't feel like that. It's more, that's my countrymate, and you have huge respect for them, and you want to see them do well as well.
Mm-hmm. Is there any race you've done, I suppose, that's comparable to it? Like, because it just looks from the outside that like the Tour is like this monumental beast that has no sort of partner. Like it's kind of almost like the Le Mans of cycling, where you're kind of like, everyone knows what it is, everyone knows that it's like a step above everything else. But for you, obviously, as an experienced cyclist, is there anything that you've raced before that could even in any way prepare you for it?
I think maybe races like the Belgian Classics would be the ones that would be most similar to the Tour de France, not in a spectacle aspect, but maybe more in the aspect of more similar to that type of style of racing, which is just really full gas and really, really, really fast and technical and just on another level with, but I suppose the Tour was just, I think people were physically on another level that I saw that was not comparable with any other races as well. It's really crazy how people can be so well prepared for this race, and that when you're racing, you're like, wow, how can, now I'm in the bunch and I'm really suffering, who is at the front and who's driving this tempo when you're doing the first hour at 48 kilometers per hour and everyone's trying to get into the breakaway, and this is like a continuation every single day for 9 days, that every time it's full gas and you're just thinking, wow, this is the hardest race I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. There was a chance for you during the tour, obviously, to contest the sprint. I think there was two standout chances, but the first one obviously being that being caught behind a crash. Like, I mean, it's not something you can ever really control, but when you get to that moment, you're kind of like, geez, I thought I was on a really good like run there now, and now I kind of have to kind of slow down a bit.
Yeah. No, that was disappointing, the first sprint day for sure, because, yeah, the people that came, like, it was a crash that really, you know, a silly crash that can be avoided. But I think it's another thing in the tour as well, that people are really stressed, and the stress is on another level to other races. And I think people take more risks. And that's why there were so many crashes during it as well, because people are more willing to put their bodies on the line to be involved in the sprints. Mm-hmm. So it puts it to a new level of danger and risk as well.
Yeah. I think you were speaking, I suppose, kind of coming up to that final stage, though there was a lot of pressure to make the time cut. And then once you had made it, it was kind of a bit more easy to sort of just enjoy the actual race itself and kind of really take it all in. Like, it seems mad to me that, like, well, was it 124 kilometers was the last stage, and there was kind of this atmosphere that, like, it's like a homecoming, or oh, we're just going out for a cycle for the end of the race. But like, to anyone else, 124 kilometers is like double or triple the races you'd be expecting to do. Like, so for you, like, to kind of get to enjoy that final bit, was there a moment of reflection for you kind of just being like, look at how far I've come?
Yeah, I think it was funny though, because that day I expected that the Col de Madeleine would be the hardest day, but I was wrong, because the last day I think was harder, because your body is tired. Your body has done an 18 kilometer climb at 9% the day before that I've never done. And then it has to push all day the next day. And it was not easy to get into the big gruppetto as well. It was actually, I had to push a lot and suffer a lot for many, many kilometers. But then once we got into the big gruppetto, we worked quite well together. So then we didn't have the stress, but you still have to push all day. So it's not really until the last like 2 kilometers that you can actually take in the atmosphere and be like, oh wow, I've come to the finish of this race, and I'm really proud that I'm here at the finish.
And like, the amount of climbs in the tour is crazy to begin with, but you kind of like when you were doing the Giro, was there much climbing involved in that, or was it a completely different sort of beast?
No, it was similar in the climbing. I think the difference was that the standard of the tour, the climbers were relatively better in the tour, so there was more people that could stay in the bunch for longer. So it was easier to be in a good group when you're in the Giro.
Mm-hmm. And suppose, you know, you look at those two races, kind of two of the big ones that everyone knows, like the Giro obviously has had its time, it's come to Ireland and everything as well over the years. I mean, you talk about the tour, like that goes without saying, it's like sort of gravity to it. And even the L'Etape, which is coming in at the end of September, is being the route and everything is being formulated by people who've worked on the Tour de France. You know, for you, like, to look at that, like, and to kind of, you know, we talk about, it's been a year since we last spoke, like Ross Noman was a fantastic win at the time, it still is a fantastic win. You know, you win the national road race, you know, that's kind of a step up win as well. Is the next step now for you to win something like a Giro stage, or even, you know, get high on general classification and those, or kind of do it again in the tour?
Yeah, I'd love to eventually be able to contest a sprint in a race like the Giro or the tour. That's really, really my dream. And I especially loved the Giro, actually. I thought it was a really special race. I'd also like to try the Vuelta as well, because I haven't this year, but maybe next year I can get a chance to have a go at the Vuelta as well.
Are you thinking of doing the L'Etape at the end of September, or is that something you're kind of like, geez, I need to get over this recovery first?
I have a few friends that are doing it, and also my mom and dad are doing it as well. So I'll know a lot of people. Also, I know a lot of people in the Carrick area, so would probably know really most of the people that are doing it. So I'd love to do it, but it's on, what date is it on?
The 28th.
The 28th of September. So it actually would be possible. If I'm at home, I actually would love to do it.
Yeah. If you feel like kind of adding more to even your already big schedule, like.
Yeah, but when I saw about Le Tap and that my dad was doing it, I was just asking him about the course and that it's in Carrick, and then I was like, oh, if I'm home, I'm definitely going to do that. Yeah. So I'd love to.
Do you think that if your parents were obviously doing it, would you stick by them for the race, or would you just sprint by them and just be like, no, I'll see you at the end?
I think if I was doing it, for sure, I would want to just go full gas. So I'd just be like, I know that when I'd be doing it, it would all go out the window and I'd be into full competition mode.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me like a little bit about like, obviously the three of you getting nominated for the tour, like, and going off and that historical moment, like, I mean, at this point I kind of feel like saying history, like history maker in your sort of field is kind of irrelevant at this point, because everything you seem to be doing is breaking history. Like, I mean, last year with the Olympics being the first, you know, Irish women's team pursuit team, you know, on top of that as well, like it was 11 years I think since there was the last native winner in Ross na Mann. Like, do you feel like you're feeling that we're in a bit of a renaissance for cycling in Ireland again?
I think we're in such a good time for on the women's side as well, because I feel like there's people that are just setting the precedent now. Like, it was amazing what Lara did in the tour to be third in one of the stages, and like now that sets the standard of where we want to be. It's not just that we want to take part in these races now, and even you see on the junior side, like Aaliyah Rafferty being third in Plouay, like all those results are just coming, and it's more normalized. There's a culture of wanting to do really well on the woman's side of cycling at the moment. And I think everyone is pushing each other. Like, Fiona is pushing me, Lara is pushing all of us to want to and to believe that we can do that, and not to just think that, oh, we're Irish cyclists, we can only do this. I think just having no limits is what we want to strive for, and just show that the young girls that those things are possible, and that breaking into World Tour teams is possible, and that it's something that's feasible, and that if you train hard that you can achieve it as well.
That's sort of like breaking the ceiling, I suppose, in terms of Irish cycling has kind of been seen throughout just the entire sport itself here. Like, I mean, even this year, like when Ben Healy won that stage of the Tour de France, like you could see how much that visibly meant to his like training team and everything that were there. Like, and it's not something that, like, yes, it was a surprise that he got there, but I think his team would probably say, well, no, this is what we've been working for all our life. Like, and you know, we knew that Ben was capable of this. And similarly, it must be for you. Like, I mean, you went out in the Tour, and I suppose maybe there was an element of it was like, let's just, you know, have a go at it, see what it's like this time, kind of setting the groundwork for future races. But for you, is that team behind you is probably saying, look, this is something that you're well capable of winning in the future.
Yeah. I think my team has a lot of belief in me, and that's really nice to feel as well. And I have a lot of belief in myself. But yeah, it's true as well that I think the women we want to get recognized like the men are as well. And I think the men have set some really amazing goals as well, and they've achieved so much. And I think to try and get the women's side to that level would be amazing, and I think it's possible, and that it's coming as well.
I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, you being as successful as you are now, it completely started out with a talent transfer program, isn't it? Like, and whoever made that decision being like, oh yeah, Mia should give cycling a go, is probably very smug all the time whenever they say like, I was the one who suggested this. Like, does that ever boggle your mind that it was just by pure happen chance of just this talent transfer program that you were like, you know what, I'm actually going to pursue cycling, and it's kind of your life now?
Yeah, no, it really does boggle my mind. And I think sometimes as well, I can be hard on myself, and I just have to think of where I came from and how I've progressed. And sometimes you want to progress faster than you are progressing. And then, but you do need to look back sometimes and be like, oh, but I came from here where I had runners and leggings on a bike to now where I'm in a World Tour team and I'm able to do the biggest races in the world that were never even on my radar. Because when I first started cycling, I even was getting dropped in any sort of national series road race. So to go from that to do the Tour de France and to finish it is like, I have to look back and appreciate where I've came from.
I think it probably says a lot about the sport now that, you know, young girls in particular are actively seeking out cycling as opposed to it kind of being something that's maybe suggested to them. Like the fact that, you know, you have all these different sports that people can try and people are opting to be like, no, I want to go out on a bike and I want to cycle and I want to win races.
Yeah. No, I think just because they see the opportunity now, even on the professional level, the professional teams have gotten much more professional on the women's side. And it's really feasible to make a living if you can get into those professional setups from the sport. So I think they see that as well and see that we're girls that can, yeah, our career is cycling and that's the only thing that we're doing and focusing on right now. And they think, oh, well, I'd love to do that as well. So that's the goal as well, is to make people think that.
Does that make, I suppose, every victory for you that little bit more sweet? Because I know obviously, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into winning a race regardless of gender. But like if you're, say, a man winning a race, you know, it's kind of a lot of personal pride and a lot of work for your team as well. But for you, there's those elements. And then on top of that as well, there's also the fact that it's a win for like trying to grow cycling with young girls in Ireland, because they will see that as something that has kind of realistically never been done before. And they're going to see that as the blueprint now for going forward.
Yeah, I think even when we went to the Olympics for the track, I think it was really significant because the people saw that for the first time, that a team pursuit, that there was a group of girls that were going, rather than say like one single girl by herself or two girls. I think that team element and just having the fact that maybe you can have this group that goes to the games is really cool. And I think now there's a group of girls that are coming up that want to go to the next games and that are motivated to do team pursuit in the Olympics. And I think that interest has stemmed from us going and them seeing that it's possible, and that as well, it opens so many doors and brings so many opportunities. And yeah, it's something that they can, that will bring them a lot to their cycling career, even if it's on the road cycling front as well, because you meet people within the cycling bubble, and it can open a lot of doors. Because the reason I even started road cycling was because I was on the track, so I could get into a Belgian club team through a mechanic on the track that was friends with one of the coaches on the Irish team. So those connections can be really, really helpful as well.
Is there a place, I suppose, in Ireland for there to be a hyper-competitive Irish team, like in terms of like, you know, you're with Roland now, but like if there's a team that establishes in Ireland, or is it just the case that there's just simply isn't the facilities here to deal with that? I know we spoke before about the fact that there's no velodrome in Ireland, and
yeah,
I think there's constant chatter about it is being built, but like where and when,
yeah,
you know, do you think that those infrastructures need to be in place before there's probably that added element of, I suppose, competitive cycling brought to Ireland?
Yeah, I think what we lack is a UCI race, and having the budget to put on the UCI race is the issue. And also, if you were to have a continental team that could develop young riders, that would be amazing. Like the likes of what they have in the UK with DAS and ALBA, where you see this year that ALBA have riders who they've developed and who've done races all over the world, and now they're getting onto big teams like the likes of FDJ because they've put that groundwork into those girls. They've given them the opportunity to go and race abroad. And I think for Irish girls, they have I think a lot of them are racing for British teams now, like the likes of Aliyah's racing for a British team. Some of them are racing for Belgian teams like Lucy. So a lot of us are very, very spread out. But I think if you had a continental team in Ireland, it would really boost up that and give the girls the opportunity to form a good team together as well. And it would strengthen the national team also. Mm-hmm.
You talk about those UCI races in Ireland, and like it is kind of one of those things that it's kind of a win-win situation, because one, you hold a very hyper-competitive race that draws in lots of people to come out and see it. And on top of that as well, I think back very specifically, and by no means did this ever have an effect on me because I didn't go off and cycle at all. But, you know, when I was younger, I remember living in North County Dublin and the Giro went through it. Mm-hmm. And I remember being out and seeing that. And that's still a memory that sticks with me as to why I kind of have a soft spot for cycling and I really enjoy watching mm-hmm. it whenever it comes up. Like something, if there was a UCI race there, there's the obvious impact as well that a child is going to go out, watch some of that and then immediately get hooked in it afterwards, isn't there?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think if you see it and you, if it's something that you can see, then you feel like you can do it. But if it's something that you don't feel like you have access to directly, or so it's just not realistic if you don't see it, because obviously in Ireland you can go to a hurling pitch and you can see people playing a match, but you don't see bike races really in Ireland. So unless you go to look for them, really. So that access aspect is why there's less people cycling.
Mm-hmm. I want to veer a little bit off to a different subject and talk about something. I was down at St. Joseph's Athletic, which is where you ran when you were younger. And funnily enough, it's a spot that you share with another Olympian, Sophie Becker, because yes. both of you are alumni of that club. Did you ever bump into each other when you were there? Or?
Yeah, we did. And we used to actually train together. So I did like athletics really to be fit for my Camogie. And yeah, she always really struck me as somebody that was so incredible, because she always wanted to do more efforts, and she always wanted to, if she was sick, she wanted to feel more sick. She was really really so motivated, even back in those days when she was more new to the sprinting, and you could just see the hunger in her. So it was fun to share those times where we could actually train together and see her at her in her roots, really.
God, that's kind of like the golden generation of that club, really, isn't it?
it's crazy as well, because we had a really nice training group with two other girls as well, Clara and Sarah, and then our coach as well. So it was a great time.
Is your mom is still a member of that club, isn't she?
She is. My mom and my sister are still a member of that mm-hmm. club now.
And do you go back there at all to kind of, even just when you're back home, to kind of stay fit like you would back then?
Oh, I've not really ran the length of myself in a long time, to be honest. But I sometimes go down and just walk around while they're training, because, yeah, running, I just can't anymore.
There's an element. I remember I was speaking to Dara Whelan from Carrick Wheelers. He was mentioned that, like, the great thing about cycling in Ireland is that no matter how big you get, and I think he was referring to Sam Bennett in this case, the fact that obviously he had won the green jersey back in 2020, yeah. and then, but he's still spotted down in Carrick as like kind of just going out for some of the like local cycles or whatever. Like that is a huge part of the culture in cycling, especially in Ireland, is that you, no matter how big you are, you kind of end up just going back to your own town and kind of just being treated like anyone else, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. You see even Sam going out for the club rides, and it's really nice. And I think all the guys like Martin O'Loughlin are just treating him like he's just any normal guy. You know, they know him since he's a child, so I'm sure that really changes how they see him as well. And it's really nice to not be just seen as the person who does these big races, to just be seen as like that child who used to do tricks or whatever, or be a menace in the cycling club.
Mm-hmm. But that's an added part of the job, really, for you, isn't it? Like that, because it is such a niche sport in Ireland, you're kind of, if you go out, like visible presence is almost important, in the sense that you kind of, if you're out in a normal, like say club cycle or whatever, like there's going to be younger members there that are like, oh, that's Sam Bennett, or that's Mia Griffin, or whatever. Like, and that will have, again, another knock-on effect that we talk about. And do you feel that that's important to you? Like, is that a conscious thing in your mind when you're going out, or is it just the case that you would have done it anyways?
I think it's just the case I would have done it anyway. And yeah, no, it's really nice to go back and do the club spins. To be honest, this year I've been so much away that I haven't got a chance to do so many club spins, but I love them when I go always. It's always a really nice time, and to stop and chat and just have a scone and a cup of coffee is just really nice.
Do you think next year you'll kind of keep up the same pace you did this year, or will it be a bit more scaled back? Or can you realistically scale back if you want to keep going the way you're going and trying to compete in the Giros and the Tours and all that?
I think next year maybe I'll try to do it a little bit less racing and just more focused on a few goals rather than hitting everything. Because I think this year was really good for developing as a rider and getting as much experience as possible. But definitely to, now that I know basically all the races, I'd like to like pare that back and just focus on doing training blocks towards the specific goals and the races that I know that are going to be good for me as well.
Is there an element that you, now that you obviously know the tracks and all that and the stages, you know, is there a point in which you can kind of nearly practice those? Is it difficult to kind of, because obviously roads in Ireland are very different to the roads in France or in Belgium or whatever, but like, is there a way in which you can kind of prepare yourself more for that? I know climbing is obviously something that you mentioned was massive in the Tour. Like, is that something that you're looking at trying to maybe keep putting a lot of work into to kind of be at that next level when you go to it next year?
Yeah, it's like, it's a fine balance, I think, because as a sprint type of rider, I like need to keep my sprint, but also I want to make my life the as least hard as possible on the mountains. And yeah, this year I probably could have done with training more in long mountains. So like that 10 kilometer kind of mountains, which are hard to find in Ireland, but in Spain or in Calpe, you can find really long climbs where you can go train for hours and get those mountains in, even if it's not my favorite thing to do, because I'd rather be going on a more like Irish like terrain where you can be sprinting and just punching up climbs. That's my favorite.
Actually, I was gonna ask that as well. Like, so if you go out and you're training for a climb, and you talk about obviously you don't want to neglect the sprint side of your game as well in that sense, but you know, how much does your sprint ability suffer if you take too much time away for it? Or is it something that you have to continuously keep working on to even just maintain your current form? Or is it something that you can come back to and you'll still be as good as you were back then and you can keep adding to it?
Definitely, if you neglect it for some time, or if you neglect the gym, my sprint does fall off. And especially if I do too much climbing where you're just moving your legs slowly up the climbs, I think after your sprint will suffer. But it's usually a case of waking it back up with one or two sessions, and it can be back to its normal self then.
Mm-hmm. I suppose I've spoken for a while and I'm conscious that I've taken up a lot of your time, but I wanted to ask one final question. It's kind of the general question that we always ask at the end, which is kind of, what is in the short term future for you now? I know obviously you're recovering from your crash, and I mean the tap might be on the cards depending on if it lines up with the schedule, but after that, what is kind of for the rest of the year are you looking at?
For the rest of the year, I was meant to do CMAC Tour, which is starting tomorrow, but obviously falling in Plouay onto my face has sidetracked that. So I need to let my body recover from this crash. And then I have China racing, and then at the end of the year I have Track Worlds in Chile, which is at the opposite end of the world, which is not ideal. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to doing both of those races. And China is I also have two races in France that I forgot about.
As you do, yeah.
But yeah, this race in China, I'm really looking forward to going back there, because I really enjoyed it the last time, because it was flat, fast racing. And
was that China? Was that the one, the qualifier for, or that was back 2023?
It was in 2020, end of 2023, yeah. October, yeah.
Was that the first race back after the concussion, was it?
It was a few races back after the concussion, yeah. And it was because I got a lot of points then, and then we could qualify the road race spot in the games.
So is that's kind of almost like, is there a sense of emotion going back to that race now?
Yeah, it was a really special race, because I before that I hadn't done any results like that on the road, so it was really crazy to do that third place in Guangxi, because yeah, I don't think I really expected that, and kind of shocked myself.
Yeah, again, I've said it so many times, but it is kind of crazy to think about. You look back 2 years and now you're going back to that same race 2 years later. Like, the difference in you as an actual rider is so much different, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, as a rider, definitely it's night and day, because at that stage I had very little fitness as well. And yeah, it's crazy to think of that rider. And yeah, I feel like that's, like, in my head I was like a baby then as well, so inexperienced in some ways also.
Mm-hmm. Well, so light work on the horizon anyways for the rest of the year, nothing too crazy.
Nothing too crazy apart from traveling from one end of the globe to the other.
Absolutely. Mia Griffin, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure as always.
Thank you, Warren.
Sports Beat Extra. Beat 102-103.